His name is Malik Zulu Shabazz. Malik Zulu Shabazz. His name is Malik Zulu Shabazz. Malik Zulu Shabazz.
It is indeed my honor and great joy and privilege to be invited by Brother and Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz, who is one of the greatest student leaders of all time.
I'm talking about terrorism now. We want a war on terrorism. The war on terrorism should have started 400 years ago. Bring the flag, brother. Bring the flag.
Bring the flag.
The ring. Because I'm here to tell you that false patriotism will not get you out of this. Holding a bandana flag around your head will not get you out of this. Huh? Flag on your antenna in your car will not get you out of this. You might be saying, God bless America. But when did America ever bless God? You might be saying, God bless America. But God might be damning America at this very hour.
What's all this shit I see on here about harassment and all that bullshit, rap for power? You some bitches get a goddamn job and make a constructive citizen out of yourself and stop all this bullshit. You wouldn't have to have no fucking rally for power. You got that message, motherfucker?
His name is Malik Zulu Shabazz.
Black power, black power, black power, black power, and more black power. My dear family, this is your brother and your comrade in arms, Brother Sean Kwali, broadcasting again live from the hells and the smells of North America, bringing you another episode, another edition, another notch in the belt of Black Power Radio, the boldest, most baddest, most official, most revolutionary radio show anywhere to be found on the airways in the hills of North America. As always, it's my honor and privilege to be talking to you wherever you are, in your car, whether you are in your homes, whether you are just anywhere in the hills of North America, wherever you are at. It's my honor and privilege to be talking to you and to be representing to you the platform and the program of the new Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. God has sent love and God has sent shouts out to our national chairman, Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz. Got to send shouts out to our national chief of staff, Brother Hashim Nzinga. Got to send shouts out to the national minister of justice, Brother Imam Akbar, and all of the national officials of the new Black Panther Party. We love you and say black power to you. Got to send shouts out to all of the new Black Panther Party chapters listening and the study groups in their circles listening. We love you and love you and love you and say black power to you. And this show, brothers and sisters, is about a land of our own. A land of our own. Now, you know, this is a topic that's been touched much over the years. It's been talked about a little bit here and there, but we want to go into some serious dialogue tonight about the necessity for a land of our own. I got to also send a shout out to our sister and comrade, Sister Fasami. She's there in Atlanta, down there on the ground, sending shouts out to you. Hope that you're listening on Black Power Radio. But I got to introduce y'all, first and foremost, before we get anywhere else in this program. I have to introduce y'all to a sister that ain't no joke. Now, a lot of y'all familiar with seeing the brothers. You'll always see the brothers of the new Black Panther Party in the paper in different places, and a lot of times our sisters are downplayed, but I just want to say for the record that our sisters don't play no background role in the new Black Panther Party. They write side by side, lock, stock, and barrel with the brothers. And so I got to introduce y'all to a sister who is our National Minister of Information. I'm going to say that again. The sister is the National Minister of Information. That is our Sister Asale. She's on the show, and she's going to be on the show with us tonight. How are you doing tonight, sister?
Black power, black power. I'm doing wonderful. Glad to be with you. Glad to be with our family. Glad to be able to broadcast black power over these airways for the masses. So I'm always good when I'm doing something constructive and for the people. Thank you for having me on.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. Now look, y'all. That's the National Minister of Information. That means that she is a information hit woman. She is a propaganda hit woman. That means that she's going to drop it on y'all like it ain't never been dropped before and leave your head spinning in ways that they never spent before. And she's on with us. And I want y'all to, you know, get to know Sister Asale. Make sure that y'all get her email. Make sure that you're able to contact and get her information. Log on into newblackpanther.org. Communicate with her and get to know your comrade, because we have to know each other and have to be family. Now, we're talking about a land of our own. And if y'all have been keeping up with the happenings and what's been going on in the news, you know that people are going buck wild crazy. Let me say it more plain. The white man has gone buck wild crazy. They've been attacking the new Black Panther Party for over 20 months now, just attacking us daily in the news. We beat that with a beautiful campaign with the skill and brilliance of our national chairman and national labor and staff. Beat that back, beat the propaganda tide away. And so now what you see now is an attack on some of the other black congressmen and black congresswomen, and you see attacks on other black figures, and even if they are not black figures, you see an attack on just straight up black. If y'all look in the news, you will see that an Israeli man, they say now went on a 3-month spree up in Flint, Michigan. He was all in Flint, Michigan, all in Toledo, Ohio, and ultimately they say all in Atlanta, Georgia. And he was just running around putting black men and women in trucks and stabbing them up and leaving them on the road for dead. Now, if that isn't a good enough sign that black people need a land of our own, I don't know what the sign is. Anytime, and let me take y'all mind back to our brother Anthony Hill that we just rose as a party to defend in Newberry, South Carolina. Now, this was our brother who had been drugged down the road for 11 miles down the gravel roads of Newberry, South Carolina, by a white man, a white supremacist named Gregory Collins. And, of course, now, Gregory Collins just recently faced indictment, but I'm saying to say that this element, this racist element, is even more so now peering his head and popping his head up all throughout North America since President Barack Obama took office. And so we've been telling y'all all along that America's racist to the core, that the Tea Party was racist, that Glenn Beck was racist, Fox News and all them type of outfits was racist. But now you're getting to see it live and in person on your streets and in your neighborhoods. And so, Sister Osley, can you just kind of weigh in on that? Tell us what you think about the happenings that's going on, you know, the killings that's been happening. Kind of talk to the people a little bit.
Well, as far as you're right and exact on everything that you're speaking about, as far as the white man going crazy, but the white man been crazy since he came into existence, really, and really since his existence has been impossible to get along with him, as so many people have always talked about everywhere that he goes, not just people, animals, wildlife, any living thing really is in danger as long as the white man is breathing, really.
Right.
It is evidence in the Gulf with everything that's going on here, the mass murders that have been going on that continue to go on, the incite to genocide in lots of different places was tried to be incited by the Israeli man who was a who went on the killing spree, who really tried to incite violence once again amongst people in the streets here. And it is really coming to a point in time where black people really need to wake up. But aside from that, aside from those points that we always touch on, which is violence, which is killing, which is death, which is destruction, you also see a mass movement of once again, in a regression of white people moving out of black communities, not just physically but economically, with different programs that are in place that are in place to stimulate our economies, which ties into reparations, which by right they should be doing, but they're doing it in a crumb-type fashion where they set up little programs, little affirmative action programs to basically pacify the people when really reparations are in order, and that's something that's the order of the day and that should remain on our minds and on our agendas. But you see the massive closings of supermarkets, the closings of schools. And I'm sorry about that, brother. And everything is basically showing a movement that I personally love. And a lot of people at one point in time fought against. They fought against segregation. They fought against Jim Crow. But it was one of the biggest blessings I feel like ever happened to black people. That's when we saw the progression of our people. That's when we saw the progression of the Tulsa, Oklahoma, the so-called, well, what they call a Black Wall Street, but I hate, like other people say, to compare ourselves to white people in order to justify ourselves, which is the growth of black hospitals, of black businesses, of black schools. And it really promoted and forced us into a period of self-reliance, as we did in the beginning when we were here on the planet by ourselves, starting civilization. And right now we see with this ultimate isolation from white people, which, like I said, I feel like is a beautiful thing, is going to force us once again to be more self-reliant, which is where we should have been in the first place. And that's where our minds really need to go. And when we're talking about a land of our own and the people who really push for those ideals, we're going to have to go back to that. And that's really my feelings on all that. Despite how devastating these things are, it seems like only the extreme things, murder, violence, draggings, lynchings. We also forget to mention Sister Teresa Adorn, who is in Beaumont, Texas, who was raped and beaten in the face with a hammer and dragged behind a truck and dumped into a sand dune she was murdered and left there in a sad state, which also happened over this summer. It didn't happen last year. It didn't happen 20 years ago. It happened this summer right here in 2010. These are the extreme things that it's going to take to wake black people up, to move them, to really start to think, man, we really need to start protecting ourselves. We need to start doing for ourselves. We need to really wake up and realize that it's really going to be impossible. And maybe some of these things that we fought so hard against were really in our best interest. That's probably one of the only things that I could say that white people got right. Let's separate from y'all, and I think that's the only thing that's really going to do it for us, is to have horrific things like this happen. As horrible as they are, it is going to do something for us, I believe, in the end, in a very beneficial way, almost in the sense of martyrdom.
So what you're saying, sister, you saying, and this is interesting, you're saying that we basically, I'm trying to sum this up, that we've suffered so much psychological damage as a people that only these type of incidences with this, I think it's Ali Bouzam or whatever, it sounds like a fake name that Israeli had anyway, but whatever his name is, these type of incidences, this is the only type of thing that's going to wake our people up? That's your assessment?
It really is, and to be honest with you, it's, what goes even further and what pains me even more is that we've become so accustomed to dying. We've become so accustomed to suffering. We've become so accustomed to having the very least that even these things don't move us. Where is the outrage? Where is the outpouring? When we hit the streets, when we hit the pavement, we went on a mass attack to show the world what was going on with Anthony Hill, what was going on with Sister Teresa, what was going on with different brothers and sisters. Where were a lot of other people? Where was the outcry of our people, of our community, of our organizations who are supposed to be standing with us in that hour? Where were they to say anything? And the silence was deafening, and it's really sad that even those things aren't waking people up. But the other thing I really try and impress upon is the fact that we have these conferences, we have conventions. We had our National Black Power Convention, the second annual one that we had. We're going to continue to have one as we continue to push in spring of 2011. We always talk about, when are black people going to wake up? We've been in this grave for too long. Well, not all of us asleep. We're here on this phone right now. The people that are listening right now, hopefully they're not asleep. And hopefully other people that aren't listening, that are at home or wherever they aren't asleep. And it's really not going to be, as long as we try to move for the hearts and the minds of our people, we must always continue to do that. Because bottom line is, regardless of whether they reach a level of consciousness or I don't even like to say reach a level of consciousness, because as you're living, as long as you're living, you should continue to grow and reach level beyond level beyond level. But we really would be remiss to say that everyone has to be on the same level of consciousness, or everyone has to reach a certain level before we can actually begin a movement. That's not the reality of the situation. The reality of the situation is that as long as they're on your side, as long as the hearts and minds are with you and that they're supporting you in what you do, whether or not they're at any given level, the movement has to continue. And the people who are at these so-called higher levels of consciousness is going to be more burden on them and really impressed upon them to carry this movement forward and to move things in a direction that they need to be moved in. If you ever notice in anything that you do, when you first start get things started off, nobody really wants to do the legwork. Nobody wants to do the hard part. Nobody wants to get the foundation set. Nobody wants to be there in the beginning meetings that toil and go through the night and the midnight hour. But when they see the progress and they see the work paying off, when they see things getting underway, that's when everybody wants to get involved. Just like all the work that we've been doing, and now the new Black Panther Party, thank God to our leadership. Thank you to the people and the rank and file, to the real solid infrastructure worldwide, not just in the U.S. We have people in the Gambia and France and London and Guyana, Jamaica. We have people all over the world in the New Black Panther Party who really put this thing together. Now, all of a sudden, people are calling us out of nowhere, really, wanting to know what's going on, wanting to work with us, wanting to do different things. And why is it? Like I said, when you're doing different things, people don't want to do the legwork. People don't want to be attacked. People don't want to stand up in the face of fire. And that's how the masses of our people are. That's how the masses of our people think. The majority of them, they don't want to be there to catch the bullets and the strays and the rhetoric and be attacked from left and right. But that's the mission that we carry on, and that's what God is putting us to do. And I feel like it's okay. I don't have a problem with that, because at the end of the day, I know our people will be behind us.
That's why it's so easy, Sister Osley, and I know you're going to feel what I'm saying. That's why it is so easy for some of these cats to be YouTube revolutionaries or Facebook revolutionaries or whatever.
That's right.
Because like you said, they don't want to be there when the bullets is flying. They don't want to be there when you're doing the legwork. They don't want to be facing down ATF and FBI and Homeland Security. They don't want to do that. They want to do it when everything is comfortable. You know what I mean? And everything is comfortable. Go ahead. I'm listening. Go ahead.
And the other thing is, it's not even just, I don't want people to just think that we're only about investing up and getting out there and standing in the face of the people who police the police state we live in. But they also don't want to take the time to sit down and study. You mentioned the study groups. That's so important. People don't want to read anymore. People don't want to study. People don't want to go and sit at the feet of our elders anymore. People don't want to go and learn the things and be apprenticed to people that they need to study under in order to get to where they need to be. Like, I'll give you a for instance. Me being a National Minister of Information, there's certain things that I need to be responsible for. And whether or not that's something that I'm capable of doing, this was a post that was bestowed upon me by our national chairman, and there's certain things I'm going to need to learn about. And if I don't know how to do it, I need to learn how to do it. I've been doing graphic artwork since I was 12. It's something that I learned at one point in time, and later on I found out that I need to use it again. But there's other things I need to learn about. Maybe I need to learn about writing and structuring a book, which I've been studying to do and studying under other people who have been there and done that, because there's other things we need to do. Maybe I need to learn about a printing press. I'm a chemical engineer. Maybe one day we need to have our own printing press, and not even just own printing press, produce our own paper. there's so many different things that people need to think about. Okay, what is your passion? How are you going to contribute to the movement? How are you going to contribute to this nation that we're trying to build? If that means that you need to go sit at the feet of this person over here for the next 9 months, year, 2 years, then that's what you need to do. Nobody should have to tell you to do that, even if you're not getting paid to do it. It's something that's invaluable. We need to place more emphasis on the things that cannot be taken away from us, and that's knowledge and the power that comes from that, from turning that knowledge into something realistic, into something tangible, into something usable for our people. And these are things that Amari Obadeli did and worked and talked about, the people that that we talked about who are key in nation building, and Dr. Amos Wilson and the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey and Elijah Muhammad and many others, the people who came after them, the people who spurred from the movements that they started and the work that they have done.
Well, I mean, let's spend some time on that, because now you're talking Marcus, the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey, and this is a brother. He's a straight up soldier now. I mean, it's a man who had steamline ships. You know what I mean? Steamline ships in the early 1900s. You know what I mean? Had an army of his own. Had his own military wing. Had his own press that was coming out. He was talking and writing in the Negro World. I mean, this is a brother, just to spotlight him, who, I mean, really, really put it down. But when you look at the movement of the UNIA and where it is today, I mean, you can't help but ask what happened. What do you think happened to isolate to the UNIA and the movement of the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey?
I believe one of the things that happened was one of the things that happens a lot is people really get into this icon world. They get so enamored with their leadership that once their leader isn't around, they almost don't know what to do. They give up. They walk away because their passion and their love wasn't truly for the people, wasn't for the greater good. It was for the person who, the person who started everything off. And I feel like partially when things were going wrong with Garvey, him being captured, held captive, him being forced into exile, when things got rough for him, a lot of people walked away. A lot of people couldn't handle it. They said, what are we going to do without our leader? It took a hell of a lot of strength from Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz to continue to carry the weight of the New Black Panther Party after the Honorable Khalid Abdul Muhammad made his spiritual transition. A lot of people probably walked away after he passed because of their love for him, and which if I never had the honor of meeting him, but I would assume that he would have really wanted those people to really stick around and hold the line, even if he wasn't there, to be there to do the work that he stressed to them, to be there to do the work that he trained them to do, that he inspired them to do, that God put in him to inspire them to do, that God that we call worship should inspire anybody to do, being in the conditions that we're in. And let me also go back to this other point. I really do not want to downplay the fact that this is a paramilitary organization. That is so necessary and so very important to us. I wanted to emphasize the balance that we have in our organization of being able to do both parts. But you better believe we're talking about nation building on this phone to each other in our rooms and anywhere that we are. We're going to come. You really think that this white man or anybody's going to sit around and really let us do some real nation building to really actually take hold and take charge and really reclaim what's really ours, talking about reparations and really putting things into play? We're not going to come under attack. Our stuff ain't going to catch on fire and things are going to happen. It's necessary. People need to talk about self-defense. We need to be talking about defending the nation that we build. Anybody in their right mind, any intelligent person, any leader, any person living under any umbrella within any borders, that's what they want. That's what they hold near and dear. One of the first things you do after you set up any infrastructure is you talk about how you're going to protect it. Everybody
right.
does that. Everybody talks about protecting their borders. Everybody
right.
runs around here and supports their troops. Why? Because they know that this is a nation they want to hold on to, something that they hold sacred. And they place emphasis on protecting their borders and putting bases everywhere and protecting what's there. So I don't by any means want to downplay that. And Marcus Garvey had definitely the right idea as far as Pan-Africanism, as far as moving internationally, establishing ourselves economically, as far as self-reliance, self-love, economic independence, but also defending that. And you better believe his troops were there to defend what was theirs and what they were trying to work out. But definitely, as far as what's going on with why things take a turn for the worse, is because until the people really put it in their minds and their hearts that what we're doing is for the people, and this is a mission that must be carried on, and your inspiration shouldn't come from a person, a icon, a thing, but it should come from a feeling and the spirit and ancestors and what's really truly in you, then what we touch and what we start is always going to fail until we reach that level.
You raise an interesting point. So, and I think we kind of hit on it a little bit on the last show. So I'm interested to hear what your thoughts are on that in terms of personality worship. We had hit a little bit on how when you have a charismatic leader, that you have people that begin to take on, you know, they like the personality of that charismatic leader, but they don't necessarily take on the work ethic or the spirit that leader possesses. Do you think that plagues the Black Power movement, that we a lot of times become personality worshipers, or do you think that that's just something that just happens, you know, in happenstance? What's your thoughts on that? Do we worship personality in the Black Power movement?
I think people in general, but definitely the Black Power movement go through personality worshiping. People getting into things for all the wrong reasons because they like this person, because they like the way this person looks, because they like the way this person walks or talks. And you always gonna have that. There are just people out there who are just followers. There's just people out there who are just always gonna be followers and who are never going to take the initiative to do the things that need to be done. And in one sense of the word, being a follower is not necessarily a bad thing. Like mm-hmm. I said, there needs to be that balance. There needs to be that fire within that person or any person to take the initiative and take it upon themselves to take what they learned while they were following, or I shouldn't even say follow, I don't even like that word, but studying under someone, sitting at someone's feet, taking in the wisdom of another person and turning it into something tangible and realistic. How can you really live your life and go through life like Dr. George Washington Carver once so eloquently put, and I hate to misquote him, but I'm going to paraphrase. He talked about people shouldn't have the right to actually go through this life without contributing something to it. Like, how can you really feel like it's your right to go your entire life without contributing something, contributing anything, using something that's within you to contribute? And it's something that plagues it, but I believe that's where in any organization, in any structure, in any structure setting, there needs to be house cleaning done periodically. And
that's true.
We always talk about shouldn't have a nuisance on your post. That's with any trained warrior. You shouldn't allow people to make a nuisance on your post. You shouldn't allow people to distract you. You shouldn't allow the white man to distract us. We shouldn't allow people who look like us to distract us. Anything that's a distraction, anything that's going to hinder us from moving forward, anything that we know that's a chronic problem should be dealt with. And that's bottom line. We should get rid of it. People, when in any other instance, would do the same thing. When your house is dirty, you clean it. When you have a pest, you get rid of it. When you're
that's
sick
right.
and something's ailing you, if you have something cancerous in your body, you go to the doctor and have it removed. Why should it be any other way in the Black Power movement? When there's something that's causing progress to slow or to be hindered, to be hampered, get rid of it. And that's the bottom line.
That's a good point. That's a good point. And I want to, if now listen, brothers and sisters, if y'all don't know about, now she mentioned the comrade, he's an ancestor now. We say I say to him, but if y'all don't know about Imari Obadeli, you need to go on Google right now or after the show and Google Brother Imari Obadeli. This is a brother now who, I mean, he covered the gambit in terms of black nationalism. I mean, he formed the Malcolm X Society. He was a founding member of the Republic of New Africa. I mean, this is a brother who, I mean, he was on the front lines. I mean, hunted down by the FBI, arrested by task and police in 71, all kind of things. Had shootouts, did all kind of things. He was a soldier. But one thing that people really don't put a lot of weight on when you talk about Brother and Dr. Imari Obadeli was the fact that Imari Obadeli had a concrete plan to take specific states. He wanted to take, I think it was Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, and South Carolina. He wanted to take those states and those fertile states and carve those out for black. I'm talking about he named them straight up and said that these is ours. And once he did that, he came under fire. I mean, as long as you have leaders, it appears that, you know, they talk the rhetoric or they, you know, make the speeches or whatnot, you know, they'll come under some kind of fire, but it ain't as intense. But when you talk about taking the land and when you talk about going international, oh, man, that's when you got some problems. So if y'all don't know nothing about Imari Obadeli, Google and research that brother Imari Obadeli. But I'm still saying this. I'm saying that right now, today, as we talk, right now, 2010, Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, South Carolina, North Carolina, all of them states is for sale right now. You can get them states. You can actually buy the land all throughout those states. We can buy the land. And we got, you know, our brothers like LeBron James, you know, he's got, you know, millions on his contract. We got all kind of black millionaires. And what I'm saying is, why aren't these brothers and the sisters that's making this kind of money, why aren't they helping us to purchase the land? Why aren't we buying up the land? I don't know how it is in y'all's community, but in my community, in the black community, the land is dilapidated. You know, you got the white man or Arabs that are moving in, buying up the properties and fixing up the homes, and our people are being pushed out and gentrified. So I'm going to ask you, Sister Minister of Information, why aren't we buying up the land? Why are we letting our own community become overrun by the Arabs and overrun by, you know, Caucasians and the Asians and everybody? Why are we not buying up our own land, in your opinion?
I believe it's truly ignorance. And ignorance is not a bad word. Ignorance just means you're in a state of not knowing. You're in a state where you're not informed properly about certain things. I believe a lot of people really don't know the power that they have, and a lot of our people are in a perpetual state of renting. They got into this habit of, I'm going to rent, and they never, and they're really too afraid to ask or to check into, or they really don't know the power that they have, especially in the period that we're in now where it's really a buyer's market, where really it's become a lot easier for people to purchase a home. There are a lot of programs out there for first-time home buyers, for people who have had bad credit history and all sorts of things. There's opportunities for everyone, you know, and really, we really have to push our people to go check into that. And not only that, the other thing is, chronically you find that when our people reach a certain level of what they feel like is success and they're making the good money, they flee from our communities that are dilapidated, that are run down so fast, it'll make your head spin. It's like, where are you going? What is so wrong with the community that you're in right now? People need to stop looking for what's already beautified and what's already taken care of and realize that their tax dollars and their hard-earned money that they went to work and worked for is what made these areas that they're fleeing to as beautiful as they are. And if they use that same energy and that same and those same resources to uplift and beautify the community around them and use the resources that's around them, then they can make that area just as wonderful as these places that they're trying to run to. It's a chronic problem. It's a chronic problem between people feeling like they have no economic power, that they have no options except to continue to rent from the white man, the Arab, and any other person who comes in just to fix up a home. And it's also the fact that people don't want to just take care of what's around them. It's the kind of problem. It's like the guy who tears things up and just wants something brand new. Just take care of what you got. Take care of what you got. You got gems around you. That's why I'm pushing so hard right now within my community and with some people that I'm working with on recycling programs and on reusable programs. I'm not talking about your average day-to-day, let's collect plastic bottles and cans. I'm also a polymer chemist, and that talks about turning these plastic bottles into coats, turning these raw materials into better flooring for our elders and who are fragile. It's talking about making fire-retardant materials out of recycled materials. It's talking about a gamut of things. It's talking about really using what's around us, the things that people consider junk and trash, and turning into usable things to make our communities what they really should be. You know what I mean? It's really...
Hold on, because I don't think that the listening audience heard what you just said for real. Hold on. Now, you work with chemicals, right? You're a chemist, or you have knowledge of chemicals, right? Chemistry, right?
I have an undergraduate degree in chemical and biomedical engineering, which engineers, it sounds all crazy and technical, but we're just problem solvers. We just take a problem and we look for solutions. That's it. And that's the bottom line, whether it's medically, you're doing biological stuff, dental, different chemicals, anything like that. But also, I'm also working on my doctorate right now in polymer chemistry, and I work with what's called making smart materials, and these materials have different functions, whether it's enhancing fuels, whether it's a smart material that will allow tissue to regenerate and grow, whether it's diseased or damaged tissues. It can be a material that's used to add reinforcement and strength to metals, just a lot of different things. It's really just making stuff. So what I was just emphasizing was just taking what's around us. Like I said, what we consider trash is actually a model program out there in Seattle, Washington. These things don't have to be reinvented. People are doing these things right now. Out there in Seattle, Washington, right now, they have a program where they separate their trash. They have their trash, they have their compost, and they have their recyclable materials. And what are some of the things that can come out of this? We have our composting. This is really important as far as it goes to feeding and nurturing the people, because it goes towards our agricultural point, which we know a chronic problem in our neighborhoods is a lack of supermarkets. Lack of supermarkets leads to a high incidence of obesity, high incidence of diabetes, lots of different health problems. And we all know if you don't feed your body right, your brain's not going to function right. If your brain doesn't function right, your other things don't function right. We always talk about a black power movement. We talk about getting things done. How the hell are we going to do anything if you're not healthy? If you're laying on your sick bed, if you're constantly over here, you're constantly over there, you can't function. So Amari Obadeli, going back to our beautiful ancestor, was working on something very important, talking about Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, South Carolina, a lot of these different states in the South, because, number one, this is fertile land. This is fertile land to nourish our people. Another thing about these states, this was a land already super saturated in people who had a very spiritual foundation, which you all know is very, very important to being grounded, to being spiritually sound. It's an important thing. Because of what people think, it's what motivates people and keeps people going. Like when we talk about our icons, well, the people, our leadership, our people who are who are there to train us, to lead us, make spiritual transitions, are taken captive, are pushed into exile, are pushed into different situations, our spiritual foundation is what helps to keep us going. These areas
right.
are also important because they're ports. They're access to international trade. They give us access to international business. They also give us the ability to connect with Africans worldwide, which further reaffirms our true identity, which is another thing that we need. We not only need a spiritual foundation, we also need a foundation within ourselves, within our true identity, so that we know we have a firm understanding on where we're going. We have a firm understanding on what our needs are as a black community. So there are a lot of different reasons why that land was chosen, which is very important. But going back to the recycling program, really, like I said, it's really going to come down to, we keep talking about it, self-reliance and these tragedies waking us up, self-reliance, using what's around us and not running from our community. Also, I was working with another sister on drafting a program, you know, these sponsor highway program, we call them Adopt a Block, where
right.
these people like you just mentioned LeBron James and other people, these different people who have the type of economic power will actually use their money to say, fix up these different houses in these communities. Then we have these HBCUs, these partnerships between the HBCU and this house now, they're going to need to go back into these communities and work out of these houses and give free services based on the work that they're doing, based on if you study in psychology. A lot of people in our communities are sick. They really are sick.
True.
We act like people aren't crazy. When people are people are sick. We have had a lot of, I hate to call out people crazy.
That's
we have
real.
A lot of, Israel, we have a lot of psychological damage from the things that have been done to us, and that's one of the things that Amara Obadeli stressed, that Dr. Amos Wilson stressed. A lot of our great leader stress is actually psychologically healing our people. The people in our community, the people who are studying in these universities and these colleges, even in high schools and trade schools and all these different places, we have a responsibility to our community. Our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our sons, our daughters, people break their backs to put us through school. People
right.
going to debt, going through school. These are people who are, why do you think they're doing that? Do you think they're doing that just so you can say you made it, so you can flee from your community, so that you can take care of yourself? No, they're doing that because they want to see not only a better you and a better family, but they want to see a better world. They want to see a better Black Nation. They want to see a better community. We have responsibility to not wait for a paycheck to do these things, but to
right.
actually sit there and give of yourselves. Give of
right.
yourselves. Give of what you've attained and what people have worked and sweated and bled and died for you to be able to do and give back to people. So with this program, we're talking about actually taking back over houses and different buildings, different lots, and actually utilizing them to do volunteer work, which is a forgotten thing. Like, people are just not volunteering anymore. New Black Panther does it all day, every day. A lot of other
sure.
organizations do it. Some other organizations do it all day, every day. Some people won't show up unless you're cutting them a check. What's the honorarium? How much am I going to get? Are you going to fly me, hotel me? Is it a 5-star hotel?
That's right. That's real.
I mean, what happened to your sense of responsibility for your brother and your sister? And these are the things that Marcus Garvey was talking about. These are the things that all of these great people were talking about. It's talking about responsibility for one another. And it's hard to feel responsibility for other people if you're not connected to them. That's why this new age with the radio, with Skype, I don't mean to cut you off, with Skype and other things, is really going to help to connect us worldwide. And I really believe it's going to help us to feel a greater responsibility for one another when we start connecting with each other on a more personal basis. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think I'm harder on the YouTube. You hear me always talk about YouTube revolutionaries, Facebook revolutionaries, and all that. But I think that it's a good medium. I just say it should be used responsibly. You know what I mean? Like
oh, yeah,
we're doing now. If you know what I mean? If the elders of the past had this type of meetings, I know that they would have used them. They would have used it, but they would have used it to further their mission, further their program, and further the cause. You know, and they wouldn't have been involved in no foolishness. So I agree with you. I don't disagree with you, but I agree with you too
on that about the foolishness that goes on. That's why I can't be bothered with certain things. There's certain things I just can't even deal with because it's too much chaos. It's too much distraction to me, and it's too much that keeps me off balance and not focused on a real task at hand. Because and that's actually a place that can be used for a lot of COINTELPRO tactics and other things. And it's like it's a good place for people to hide and get new identities and say you this one and not say you that one and just cause confusion. And then what happens at the end of the day? You waste so much time trying to figure out who's doing what and who said what and who did why and posted what. God damn, did you get anything done that day? Did you get anything done at all?
Right.
Did you really? And do you really feel like you're fulfilling anything? It's a great way to waste time. But like I said, like you said, it can be used constructively, and it's a good thing. Because it ain't fair,
yeah.
Right? It ain't for me.
Yeah, I mean,
but,
that's a word to the wise, to the listening audience. Everybody who you click on your Facebook, you know, the CIA knows how to make Facebook pages, too. So it just... Be careful.
You better know what I mean?
Use the page and use these mediums, for the advancement of black people. Now, you mentioned Dr. Amos Wilson. And,
mm-hmm.
I mean, Dr. Amos, I think that this is a black man who is really, really, really understudied, underappreciated, I mean, you know, under-talked about. He had plenty of speeches, plenty of books, but the blueprint for black power by itself, if he'd ever made nothing else, it is enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? The man will break down education, black on black violence, manhood in the 20th century. He was going into it. And from what I understand, you know, Dr. Amos, may God be pleased with him. He died brokenhearted. He died, you know, brokenhearted. And I'm just saying, here's a man with a blueprint for black power, giving you a straight up point by point analysis on how to have freedom, justice, and equality. And it goes back to the same thing we talked about with Marcus Garvey. You know, why didn't he have the support? And I'm bringing these points up for a reason for you to answer, because now we're faced with the same thing as the new Black Panther Party and the Black Power movement in general. So, you know, why do you think that Dr. Amos Wilson, his work was so underappreciated, you know, given the volume of work that he had?
It's really sad, and we come across this point where we say people are before their time. Or not only that, we have to get black people back to reading. Not everybody is going to be able to, not everybody would have been able to attend a speech or a lecture by Dr. Amos Wilson. But why do you think he sat down and wrote all these books? Why do you think he wrote The Developmental Psychology of the Black Child, Awakening
right.
the Natural Genius of the Black Child, Black on Black Violence, Understanding Black Male Adolescent Violence, The Falsification of African Consciousness, Blueprint
right.
for Black Power, and African-Centered Consciousness? Because
right.
he left something out there that could reach the masses. If you can't get to me, if you can't talk to me directly, if you can't come to one of my speeches, read my book. I laid it out for you. And it breaks people's heart to go into such in-depth work. And I was watching him, and he kept talking about trying to wrap up the book, but there's just so much. We can't sum up the black nation in 25 words or less. This ain't an article
right.
you can squeeze in a column of a side of a page of a newspaper of a magazine. This is something that really we're substantial people, and we need substantial work. We need substantial something that we can give to you to digest and that you can mull over for a while. And that's something that you can hold on to. You can't keep Dr. Amos Wilson in your closet. If you have his book, his work, his thoughts next to your bedside or somewhere close by, you can always refer back to it. And it will break any man's heart to go through that type of labor and work to give something as beautiful as he gave to our people and have them not take it in and work through it and read through it. So it's really important to note that people don't do this work for nothing. And this isn't
right. Something
that you can be an event junkie with. Like you said, this isn't something you can be a YouTube revolutionary with. This is something that takes constant and consistent work. Not everybody is ready and willing to do that. Not everybody
right. Has
the team to go the long haul. Not everybody has what it takes to go all the way. And not everybody has the fortitude to actually sit down and read. So many what I noticed was, I noticed a parallel amongst Dr. Amos Wilson. I noticed a parallel with Amari Obadeli and the Honorable Mark Mogai Garvey. They all of them had, in some way, shape, or form, knew how important it was to get information out to the people. They
mm-hmm.
knew how important it was to get the people the newspapers, to get people the books, to get people some type of thing that they could hold on to. What's one of the first things that happens anytime the white man went into any civilization, any nation? What is one of the first things that he did? He destroyed their libraries. He destroyed
right. Their
records. He destroyed the history of themselves so that the generations past, the generations after them, what you know what the telephone game does, even though people downplay the oral tradition, it was very important. But what was also important was that legacy that was written in stone, that legacy that was written on papyrus, that legacy that was written on different papers and different writing tools and materials. And that's why these people work so hard to get it written down again, because you have to start this collection all over again. This is something that people can always refer back to. This is something that's very important. Information is very important. And initially, I didn't understand the importance of my position initially. I was like, oh, well, this is just going to be, you know, some mundane thing. You want me to make some flyers? What do you want me to do? And I'm taking this work much, much, much more seriously now, because I realize how important proper information is for the people. So many people get swayed one way or another, and they're warped into this media age that we don't control. If you notice that cracker you talked about that went around stabbing all these brothers, and I'm sure some brown people, because they say not all of his victims were black. I'm sure the other ones were brown. They damn sure weren't white. All the news reports that I saw, all the mugshots they showed to him, they never showed this cracker's name. Not once. But you see black faces on the media, black males that
wow. They
had that so-called committed a crime or allegedly committed a crime, they flashing their name real big as they can. And you wonder why they do that. We don't control that. That's why
right. We
have to have our own media outlets. We have to have our own ways to get information to the people. And it's important.
You said something heavy that, you know, I just wanted to really put on the listeners' brains, and I want y'all to think about, and us to think about what happened to us, you know, and make Sister Osley's words, you know, personal to yourself, because the National Minister of Information, she said, and this is real, she said that when the white man came in to any land in the world, one of the first things they did was destroy the libraries. Now, you ask yourself, brothers and sisters, where's your library? Where's your library? If it was not for, you know, scholars like we're talking about, like Dr. Amos Wilson, and we're talking about the Bible, Dr. John Henry Clark, and we're talking
right. About,
you know, on and on, others greats who have given us the knowledge, where would you go to get your knowledge from? Our libraries have been destroyed. And so that's why I'm saying that in talking about a land of our own, we also talking about reclaiming our culture. We're talking about reclaiming our original names. We're talking about having our original language. We're talking about all that, because if we're going to have our own land, of course you got to have your own government. Of course you got to have your own military. Of course you got to have your own everything. I just wanted to kind of put some weight on that because that's real. Our libraries have been destroyed. We don't have no books for real. You know, many of them, they don't have the white man's paw print on them. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. But we
don't
will.
Have that.
We will. Black Power Library coming this century. say. It's going to come. We're going to have it. We're working on it. We're working on that and much, much more. And it's important. We also have to not forget our sister, who our queen mother, was still with us, Marimba Ani. We're one of the very first people to actually critique Europeans. They run around critiquing the hell out of everybody. They critique everything and everything that moves, and they talk about this and pick it apart and talk about it. She was one of the only sisters who have sat down and critiqued the European from an Afrocentric point of view. That's important to know. She wrote some really heavy stuff. Like,
say that name again for those that didn't catch you. Say the name again of the sister.
Her name is Marimba Ani, Dr. Marimba Ani.
Marimba Ani.
Yes.
Google that.
Yes. Yeah, Marimba Ani. So definitely somebody to check out. So libraries are important. These different things are important, but it's important to know that, like I said, once you start getting stuff into motion, the people will come. This isn't something that we have to wait for everybody in the whole world to wake up and be like, we really are oppressed. White people really are enemies. Black people who follow the rules of the white man are enemies. Brown people who follow the rules of the white man are enemies. Anybody who follows the white man's laws and feels like they're right and they're just and exact and they benefit our people are our enemies. And when we stop thinking that we have to get everybody on the same page before we can do anything constructive, we'll be a lot better off. We really will be. Because that's when we can start getting this movement moving forward.
So do you think that that's a critical error that we're making, that we, you know, I'm just speaking in general, that many of us feel like we need everybody on board before we make the move or work towards revolution, or we need, you know, a thousand in our ranks or whatever the case is? Do you see that as a critical error we're making, a mistake?
I think so. I think we're underusing the talent that we already have. I think that a lot of emphasis is placed on, and don't get me wrong, I emphasize always moving forward and always getting people involved and always making sure that that the work that we're doing is getting done and started up in other places. But I think to really focus on not being distracted by the white man's media all the time and being so focused on reacting to his attacks, and actually focused on following through on projects and different things that we need to do as a community will really benefit us. I think his attacks are also helps in using us to throw us off track. We have some people that focus on purely making sure that the people know that we're here only for good intentions, only for them. That's good. You have to have certain people doing certain things. And the other thing is people need to pull their weight. You can't just be in this and say you're doing this just to look good or just because we're getting good feed from the people right now or just because we're getting a lot of press right now. You have to do what you can. You have to do what you need to do. This can't be done by a handful of people. This can't be done by an armful of people. This has to be done. You have to do something. If you're going to get involved, you have to do something. And the other thing is, if you're not going to be with the New Black Panther Party, join somebody. If you don't want to join somebody, do something on your own. There's too many different people doing too many different things. A good brother that we know said we need to have a meeting to organize organizations, which I think is critical. There's so many of us working on all cylinders, but we're working apart, and that's also going to crush us. I think that's another huge critical mistake that we make, is that organizations aren't working together enough. Not working together at all. I didn't say at all, because we are working together, but I don't think we're doing it enough. It's not enough.
Why do you think so many organizations, I got to make this personal. Why do you think so many organizations or people stray away from the New Black Panther Party? Why don't they pull closer to us?
Why? Let me see. I think I've only been around since 2004. What have I seen over this? It's been a very quick 6 years. I've seen a lot of growth. I've seen, when I first joined, I'll tell you why I first joined, which is why a lot of people I see join. People join when they get angry. At the time,
right.
I was angry and I was frustrated. I grew up in an all-black community, and my household, I've always been told to be very proud of who I am. And when I got into phases in my life where I was dealing with other people, namely white people, and I started to experience racism on another level, and us being a spiritual, loving people that we are, I always tried to go back to, you know, maybe I'll just try again, or maybe it'll get better. Maybe they won't do that again, because I really didn't like that, and I told them I didn't like it. When you really get to the point where you're angry and you're fed up, you're like, God damn, y'all really just evil as hell. Like, some of y'all just really, really, that's just how y'all are. You're just not going to change. And you get to the point where you're really angry, and we draw a lot of people who are fed up. We draw a lot of people who are angry, and like we talked about, some people who come into the organization who haven't been properly debriefed and worked with psychologically. We have all different phases that we've gone through, but I've seen us mature in a way that is actually amazing. It's been a beautiful thing. I've gone from seeing a lot of emotion moves made under, under emotional duress because of the sense of urgency, because of the sense of need that nobody else is standing up and other people are too afraid to stand up. We talk about facing people who drag, murder, and lynch our people, to also the balance of that, which will always be there to do those things, but the balance of that and showing the constructive side and showing the different and the beautiful side of our people where we can actually turn around and get something done. And I think that the more that people see the balanced side of us, between us being the protectors of our community, of our people, to be there when nobody else will and to do the grunt work, but also to be there in the building stages, in the constructive stages, in the planning stages, that people will begin to work with us. Like you said, not everybody is built for war. Not everybody is built for battle. And the people who aren't are the people who strayed away from us. And also, I feel like people really stray away from us because so many times we get this question, and it's so irritating to me, but I guess if I was somebody else, I guess I would ask too, is there still a need for the new Black Panther Party? People who feel like there just is no need for a paramilitary, Black nationalist, Pan-Africanist organization, they really just stay away from us.
Right.
So, you know, it's a number of things, but being able to show different sides of ourselves and being able to show the different battle dress that we have in our wardrobe, which we could switch it up. We're not always in fatigues. Sometimes we're in suits. We're in dresses. We're in dashikis. We're in African garb. We're people, too. We're human beings. We're mothers. We're fathers. We're sisters. We're brothers. We're somebody's children. We're people just like them. When we show that side of ourselves, it'll also help the people to know.
You mean to tell me you don't sleep in your beret?
What? It's right by my bed.
You always got to keep it on already.
Huh? You got to keep it on. I say you got to keep everything on already. You never know what's going to happen.
But the point you made was valid, that we are regular people. We your brothers and your sisters. I probably love some Black Combat boots, but I mean, you know, I got Chuck Taylors too.
I said he'd be like, sister, please take them boots off, but I love them though. I still got my first Jungles I ever got. Still ain't changed them from 2004. The first ones I bought, still got them. But
you're rocking. Tell the audience a little bit about you. What made you join the new Black Panther Party, you know, and kind of touch on the black woman in this movement dealing with sexism and some of the things that you all go through. But first, as the first question, you know, what was it that made you join the new Black Panther Party, and then touch on the sister in the Black Power movement for our listening, okay. listeners that are women and females?
I was actually, like I said, it came from a lot of frustration. I was actually a sophomore in undergrad, so that was, oh God, what year was that? I don't know, like 2002, 2003. And I was sitting in my room, and I was sitting at my desk like, man, I'm so pissed off. And I started searching some things. I was like, man, the type of feeling that I was feeling, I said, I feel like I'm a panther or something. And I was really talking like that. I was like, there got to be some people out there. There got to be some people out there like me. I was like, and I'm going to find them. So I started, like, looking on the internet, like, are the original Black Panthers still around? I'm going to try and find them and blah, blah. And I didn't find anything. I found that website, you know, the original Black Panther Party, blah, blah, the original Black Panther Party, whatever it was. And so I kind of stopped looking. And then the next, that coming summer, I was sitting there getting my hair done and about to go out and hang out with my friends, and I saw this flyer for a meeting in Newark of the new Black Panther Party. Boy, I got so excited. I said, man, I said, this is spiritual. You know, here it was. I was just sitting in my room some months ago talking about where the Panthers at, and here it is. I see a flyer just right in my lap. You know what I mean? I'm in town. I was going to school in Pittsburgh. I was in Jersey at the time, and I got this flyer, and I was like, man, I'm going to go to this meeting. I told my people at the time, I was like, y'all need to come to this meeting. They was all like, we ain't going with you to that. We about to go to arcade. We about to go here. We about to go there. Just talk, call us when you get done with all that. And I was like, whatever. I went down to the meeting by myself, and I was blown away because I said, there are people out here who think like me. There are people out here who feel like I do. And there are people out here who are doing something about it, because I've always been a person who I knew it was always in me to serve the people. I've always been doing community service since I can remember. If it wasn't something dealing with learning how to do something, to do something constructive and teach myself how to do something constructive or learning from somebody else, I was doing community service work. It was whether it was cleaning up the community for my very first job, part of the week we was working, the other part of the week we was doing community service. Some of the very first jobs I got. So I always knew I wanted to be a servant of the people, and that's what the new Black Panther Party is also about, being a servant of the people. So I joined that summer. It was 2004. I was 19 at the time, and I went back to school, and I would come back and forth from Pittsburgh to Newark. Even when they called me just to come to the streets to pass out flyers, I would drive 8 hours in my car to go soldier in the streets with the Panthers. And I'm like, all right, what are we going to be doing? They said, we're going to hit these streets and pass out these flyers for our meeting. Cool. And it didn't bother me none. I was putting in work. I was like, wherever y'all need me to be, whatever we need to do, that's what needs to go down. And the next maneuver that I, one of the first maneuvers that I went on was with our brother King Samir, going to face the Klan in Eastern Pennsylvania. And I drove down again, hopped in my car, drove down. No, I rode the bus. I got on Greyhound. Got on Greyhound bus and went down there. And that's when I met the national chairman for the first time. And we went on that maneuver, and it was eye-opening, you know. A lot of things went on that day. But I met the national chairman, and that's when he was like, you need to bring me to your school. I was going to Carnegie Mellon University at the time. And he was like, you need to bring me to your school. So that's when that all kicked off. You would never believe what happened to me. It's a very long story, but I'm going to try and condense it for the sake of the show. When I was getting started, we would have these watered-down Black History Month programs, and I was really frustrated at the time because at my school, they called us nigga in the student newspaper. They had certain organizations on the campus holding slave auctions, and this was paid for with student fund money that came out of our tuition. There was white kids running around in blackface on Halloween. we would have a Black History Month program, and they told us we couldn't sing the Black National Anthem because we was making other people feel left out. So, and on Martin Luther King Day, where normally everybody gets the whole day off, they said you'll have two-thirds of the day off. So you have to go to class up until such and such time, and then after that, then you have the rest of the day off to observe Martin Luther King holiday. And even during that day, even during those times of Black History Month and all that, the programs were watered down. They were talking about bringing in Jerome Bettis and people like that, and I'm not downplaying, you know, athletes and their charitable organizations and stuff, but come on now, these are write-offs. These are things they do because they have to do it, basically. This is not somebody substantial. So when I brought up the idea of having Attorney Malik Zul Shabazz coming to campus, the people went crazy. The Jews went crazy. And that's what they were. They were Jews in the community because it's a large community of Jews in Pittsburgh in the school.
Right.
They went buck wild. They did everything in their power to shut it down. They had, I had inside information from a sister, Nicolette Massant, who was a very good sister who helped me at the time, who was a part of the student government, and told me about the secret meetings that the student government was having, that no matter what, because I had to go before a hearing to have to get funding to bring the chairman there. And they said, no matter what you say, no matter what goes on in this meeting, they're going to deny your funding. And I handled them crackers. They were throwing every question you could imagine at me. What is this website about? Kill all the crackers and kill them all. And what is this about such and such? And I just handled it in a very professional manner. And there was nothing they could really say, because as far as being a student, I was protected as a student under the controversial speakers policy, that basically a university, a college, is a place where there should be a free flow of ideas. There should be a free exchange of thought. And no matter what anybody feels, what anybody thinks, what anybody's position is on anything, they should be given a platform, and they should be allowed a platform on school grounds. And
right.
As a student, I was protected by that. And I was
right.
Within my rights as a student to invite our national chairman to our campus. And he was coming there to speak on the role and responsibility of the Black college student. How the hell
right.
should that offend
I'll
anybody?
Right.
Why should that offend anybody for the brother to come and speak to Black students during Black History Month about our role and responsibility as Black college students? You know,
right.
And so it even went so far as to where the president wrote a letter about the entire incident. And here it is. David Dukes, at the time the head of the KKK, came to campus. Michael Moore, who's very controversial, came to campus with no outrage or outpour. It got so bad where my friends were threatened in their homes during the year because they thought that they were supporting me. White kids from the campus would show up at their houses in the wee hours of the night, all sorts of things. People who I thought were my friends would literally avoid me on campus. They see me and walk the other way. Professors stopped talking to me. It got pretty bad, you know. But in the end, what really helped me was the community. I started going to the community more, and the community started pushing it. And Sister Nazora and other people in Pittsburgh, my beautiful family, really helped me push it and get the word out that I was coming under attack, because my friends were basically like, look, we're just trying to get out of here and graduate. Nonetheless, they threatened Attorney Shabazz, said what they were going to do to him when they got there. The Jews came out, held a press conference. People came out from everywhere to protest the event. They tried to take the room from me in the end. They set it up where they moved the room I was supposed to be in, but they didn't know. I already had another room set up. Two other rooms set up in back, and I said, okay, when they get here, tell them, I already knew she was going to take the room from me at the last minute. I think like a week before the program was supposed to go on, the cracker was supposed to be locking the room down for me, said, there seems to be a problem. I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to get the room. I thought I reserved it, but I didn't. And I was like, oh, that's okay, you know, just playing a little game with her, you know what I mean? But I already had flyers made up, like, as I told my friends, I was like, all right, hit the campus right now. So hit the campus, had flyers, everybody go to this room, but that wasn't even the right room. I did that on purpose. Then I had somebody waiting at that room. All right, when people get to this room, you tell them where the real room is. Direct them this way. You know what I mean? Because I didn't want them crackers flooding the room so that the brothers and sisters who really need to hear the message couldn't hear it. So
strategy, definitely.
So had somebody set up there. So everybody came. Man, it was crazy. So it was a beautiful event. It's a classic. You can still get it. It cut the lights out during the speech. They were mad. They were talking about there was preferential seating. You weren't letting white people in. And it really wasn't for you, Cracker. It really wasn't for you. We wasn't talking to you or about you. It had nothing to do with you. But in the end, we wound up having to talk about them because it was so crazy. But after that, it got even heavier because I had applied to graduate school. I always knew I wanted to go to grad school. And it got to the point where I had gotten an offer to go to grad school in Arkansas. All of a sudden, the school didn't know who I was. They didn't have any record of me. They weren't investigating it. Called about four of the schools I had applied to. All of a sudden, they had no record of me ever applying at all. None of them. Every single one. Then all of a sudden, I get a call. 10 days. I'm at home now. 10 days before I'm supposed to graduate. And my professor calls me on the phone saying, oh, by the way, you're not graduating. What do you mean I'm not graduating? And what do you mean? What do you mean not graduating? I'm just telling you, you failed your class, you did this, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, this is crazy. Because wait till I get home and y'all tell me that I'm not about to graduate, y'all losing your mind. So it was, I had to hustle, I had to pick up a job right quick, shared an apartment with another girl. They had me jumping through hoops to finish this project. Then I had to move again through the summer, get another job. On the fly, subletted another apartment from his brother, sleeping on the mattress. I had a mattress, a radio, a clock, and a couch. That's all I had in my whole apartment. Just hustling, trying to get this work done. And definitely so. And I got through it, you know. And I worked real hard to get Black into school. Thank goodness I did, with the help of my king and my family. Back into school, and I'm doing my thing now, and there's nothing that they could do to stop me. They tried to stop me every way they could and crush me and break me, and it was a very trying time. It was a very trying time for every revolutionary to go through anything. Everybody's going to go into fire at some point in time. But I just kept pushing, and I'm doing what I do right now, and every day I plan, as much as the people may or may not hear from me, every day the Black Nation is on my mind. Every minute and every hour and every second, everything that I do, from the polymer chemistry that I do, the chemical and biomedical engineering that I was doing, every person who I sit under the feet of to learn other things that might seem small and trivial to other people, but to me is very important, from photography to this to that, is important. I'm thinking about how I'm going to utilize these skills that I'm learning, that I'm obtaining, to help the Black Nation, to help
our
people.
So,
and some of the main things I've really been looking into is the depopulation scheme that has been going on, as far as vaccinations that have been used to sterilize our people, to infect our people with infectious diseases, how that scheme has even gone into American form. International policy, which is one of the articles I wrote about in one of our former papers that I did. Also, really looking into the health and wellness of our people, really looking into nation building. And from that, like I went back to, goes back into self-defense, just talking about making our houses stronger, making the places that we live more weatherproof, whether we live in hurricane-ridden areas or like we saw in Katrina, which was a terrible disaster, which our people don't have to go through, and it doesn't cost a whole lot of money to make. If that's what they call home, that's where they want to be, we should make something affordable that they can live in, where there's spherical housing that'll help them have hurricane-proof housing, flame-retardant housing for certain areas that are chronic to lightning storms and different things. So Just a number of different things. Like I said, my mind is always on how I can help our people with what I'm doing and what I'm learning. But one of the other things that happened as a result of working with the chairman so closely is when I got moved to the position of, after I was chairwoman of Pittsburgh at the time and working there, I got moved to the post of National Minister of Information. And that, with that, not only was I pretty key at that time in helping to get information to the masses in the form of making sure that we had press releases out, to flyers, to actually doing the New Black Panther newspaper, of which I've done many, a lot of which the world hasn't even gotten to see, because that's another nightmare in and of itself, which is why it was so important that Garvey did the work that he did in printing his own paper, and other, the Nation of Islam now, who prints their own paper, The Final Call, which is why we're moving to print our own paper. A lot of papers that we did were so controversial, so heinous, I can't tell you how many times we got to the printer, and the printer's like, we're not printing this. You could
That's
do all
right.
you want, you could protest, you could do this, you could do that, and here it is, another great paper goes down the drain. I think it's total, I did probably 6 or 7 full papers front to back, and most of them nobody has seen. I still haven't, but that's another story. But you know, it just goes on to talk about self-reliance and individuality. Now, as far as sexism, I think more so I've experienced sexism on an individual basis. Like, I'll run into a brother here or a brother there that just feels like I'm not taking no type of instruction or anything from a sister at all. I don't care who you are or what you are or what's going on with you. I'm just not listening to you because you're a chick, you know. But as far as being the New Black Panther Party, I really haven't felt too much of that. I can't say it all, not at all, but as far as being a sister, this is one of the organizations where I feel like it's the most progressive for sisters. We've had sisters in national positions, regional positions, local positions, just really been almost given free rein to do whatever it is that we need to do. As far as organizing, as far as putting things in a place, I'll tell you, one of the main reasons we have, if nobody's doing it, you do it. And anybody really going to stop you if we see that it's really going to benefit the people, is it going to benefit the organization, is it going to benefit anything like that. I really don't feel like I've had those type of problems, and I thank God for the brothers that I work with and even the sisters that I work with. I haven't really felt like I've been crushed on that level, you know,
that's
where
beautiful.
Other people say they have.
We got about 7 minutes left. And I mean, you have really been driving. I mean, you've really dropped bombs tonight, and we appreciate it. I guess at this stage, kind of tell the people, you know, who want to organize underneath the Ministry of Information. I know we got some people in the chat room as well that want to know how they can contact you, maybe an email or some way that they can organize and help the Ministry of Information, the National Ministry of Information, the New Black Panther Party.
Okay, I'll best to reach you by email. You can hit me at NBPP, like New Black Panther Party, 412, at Yahoo, or you can also hit me at BP Convention 2010 at Yahoo. Either one of those will work, any one of those will do fine. Again, that's NBPP 412 at Yahoo, or BP Convention 2010 at Yahoo. Really, how can they help? Do they have any specific questions? I don't know if you're seeing the people and their questions right now, because I wouldn't have no problem taking any specific questions.
The only specific question we already answered in the chat room was they wanted to know if you had good aim with your weaponry. We already know the answer to that question, so we don't even answer that question.
If I have good aim with my weapon.
Yeah.
Well, brothers and sisters, depending on what weapon you're talking about, we're multifaceted. We really are. While I definitely believe in our Second Amendment right, and it is our right to have their arms. You know, we have other weapons too. As why National Minister of Information always carries a pen, and one of our most important weapons. I tell people, you can't carry a gun or you ain't going to carry a gun. Carry a camera. Carry a video camera, a regular camera, a tape, anything, you know, a lot of the time.
Those are weapons.
Things and evidence is our best weapon, you know. So
right.
Those are good weapons. And make sure you can aim straight with that.
What would you say in the last 4 minutes? Just give a word of encouragement to the black woman and our brothers as well, but especially the black woman listening who's on the fence, as we say. She's teeter-tottering and he's teeter-tottering. Don't know whether they should get in the new Black Panther Party. Don't know whether they should get in the Black Power Movement. Don't know whether they should be a revolutionary. Kind of give them a word of encouragement, you know, to help them get off that fence.
Looking around you, looking within yourself and looking through whatever personal trials and tribulations you have been in should be encouragement enough. Should be. There's always something to be done. And whether the action, whether you feel like your contribution is not big enough, it's something. Anything that you can do. If you, like they say, if you can't go to the front line, send ammunition. We always need help financially as well to do the work that we do. This is not free. Freedom is not free.
Right. That's right.
I really encourage people to do something. Do something, period. You have to make sure that I'm looking at my baby girl right now and my husband. I was also going to say one of the other things is be inspired by the faces around you, by the people that love you. This should be also motivation enough to do something, to get off your behinds and do something. As far as if you don't want to be with the new Black Panther Party, like I said before, join somebody, join something, do something. It's important enough to do that. As far as being sisters, a nation can rise no higher than this woman, and it has been, it has not been truer to me than this past year than I have shown that. And there's no disrespect at all to my brothers who are on the line, who are listening, who I work with. But I realize that we play a very pivotal role when you talk about the sisters are here and we're doing things. We are. We have been working, noticed or unnoticed, and that's not necessarily a necessity to always go notice. We play a key role in the lives of the brothers that we're in relationships with and the brothers that we work with. We're a key balance, and they're a key balance for us. And it's time for us to stand up as mothers. It's time for us to stand up as helpmates. It's time for us to stand up as the organizational gurus that we are and do what we need to do. And also to stop fighting one another. This nation is going to go nowhere without the bitterness, the backbiting, the evilness, the dirty look, the stares, the animosity, the deep-seated irritated feelings that we have for one another. We have to air out these things. We have to heal our wounds. Hey, baby, we have to really heal the bonds that we have between one another so that we can move forward. And that's one of the things I'm impressed upon. We had a beautiful sisters meeting at the National Black Power Convention. We're going to have a follow-up meeting coming in Atlanta very soon. When the date is confirmed, we will be letting the world know, because this has to be an ongoing process, an ongoing healing process, and an ongoing process to continue to build a Black Power movement. So what I to sisters out there, is to heal your relationships with one another, really get stuff out in the open, and really lean and rely on one another and move forward and be the helpmate that you can be for these brothers out here. We love you, brothers.
That's
we
what
really,
I'm talking
really
about.
Love y'all. We love y'all to death. That's why we're still here, no matter what. And we know what the system is designed to do, designed to break y'all, to take y'all, and we still here, and we always will be. We want y'all to know that.
That's what I'm talking about. Y'all heard it here first. That's the National Minister of Information, Sister Osley and Zynga. And we closing out now, last 29 seconds, but we thank y'all for listening, and we will definitely be hearing more and more from our National Minister of Information over the next few weeks. And so, as always, we want y'all to tune black in Monday night, black in Monday night. Come in at 11 p.m. Eastern Time for more Black Power Radio. We close out, as always, with Black Power.
Black Power. Black Power.
His name is Malik Zulu Shabazz. Malik.
Them. Neighborhood know we coming. Jake hate him, snakes cannot violate him. Pimps memorize his lines verbatim. He reps in YO, gives he knows to Wino. Not church, this how we tied though. He walks in tenement, sleeps at a super fly condo. My kind of nigga, my icon, my idol. No certificate for this misfit who handle business. The odds stacked against him, he fights back, Mac and Benzes. Never puts cash or ass before friendship. He laughs last, and some die young, he is still existing. Somehow he got around the pitfalls of the system. When he walks, we watch. When he talks, we listen.
Yeah, I already told her. I said, shit, I told her to call back in. I cleared the line so she can call in. She just didn't call back in. So I know she had an attitude. So I ain't calling her nothing.
Make sure you call her
mom. I'm trying to know.
I don't want her to be trying to
tell me. How's she going to do it?